truly are grateful for the encouragement we've received throughout this. We're going to be in Acts chapter 18. If you turn to the book of Acts chapter 18, where we read quite a bit about Priscilla and Aquila. And I've grown to truly appreciate them, not only for their individual dedication to the Lord, but we see how strong their dedication was towards each other. And as we see this dedication as a husband and a wife, we see how as we learn to become more committed to each other and put into practice the principles of spirituality and the love of Christ within our marriage, we see how it even comes out and facilitates an even stronger way of being useful to the Lord. So we kind of feed off of each other. We kind of feed from the love of God and His direction, and kind of pours that into our committed relationship as a husband and a wife, and then even strengthens that ability to be useful to the Lord. And so we just want to look at some principles here this evening and strengthen us together. Let's read Acts chapter 18, beginning in verse 1. Acts 18, verse 1 says, "After these things, he left Athens and went to Corinth. And he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. He came to them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working, for by trade they were tent makers. And he was reasoning in the synagogue every Sabbath, and trying to persuade Jews and Greeks. But when Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, Paul began devoting himself completely to the Word, solemnly testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Christ." We drop down a few verses and pick up verse 18. Acts 18, verse 18 says, "Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria. And with him were Priscilla and Aquila. In Centuria he had his hair cut, for he was keeping a vow. They came to Ephesus, and he left them there. Now he himself entered the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to stay for a longer time, he did not consent. But taking leave of them and saying, 'I will return to you again if God wills,' he set sail from Ephesus. When he landed at Caesarea, he went up and greeted the church and went down to Antioch. And having spent some time there, he left and passed successively through the Galatian region and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples. Now, a Jew named Apollos, an Alexandrian by birth, an eloquent man, and came to Ephesus, and he was mighty in the Scriptures. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he was speaking and teaching accurately the things concerning Jesus, being acquainted only with the baptism of John, and he began to speak out boldly in the synagogue. But when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. And when he wanted to go across to Achaia, the brethren encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. And when he had arrived, he greatly helped those who had believed through grace, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public, demonstrating by the Scriptures that Jesus was the Christ." One of the first things that I notice about Priscilla and Aquila, you'll never read really any one of them by themselves. Every time you read about Priscilla and Aquila, both of them are always together. Did you catch that? It's always Priscilla and Aquila. And we see a very strong, loyal, dedicated marriage that is loyal to one another. And one thing also we're going to notice, they're always on the move. They're always moving from one place to the next. Did you catch that also? Even in all the changes throughout their life, they lived in a wide variety of different places. We learned first they started off in Rome. Living in Rome, that's where we learn the first time they're mentioned. But they moved from Rome to Corinth. from Corinth, they end up in Ephesus. And later we find out eventually they find their way all the way back to Rome. And they do quite a bit of moving. As I think about that, and I know my wife and I have done quite a bit of moving ourselves. In 14 years we've been married. When we add this up, it's kind of hard to believe. We moved 10 different times, which seems kind of odd because we haven't lived in 10 different cities. I mean, only 4 or 5, but we've done quite a bit of moving. One thing I know about moving, especially as a married couple, what stress that puts and the strain it puts on your relationship. All the things that you find comfortable are in your boxes, your favorite t-shirt, the mug you drink your coffee out of, and you can't find these things. And you find out really quick the things that kind of set you off a little bit and the little things that kind of make you a little unsettled and maybe start snipping a little bit at each other. And all those little things come out when all of your comfortable items that make you you are in boxes and you don't know where any of it is. I'm impressed that this couple moving as many times as they were, they're still married, but it's not just marriage hanging on by the threads. This couple, every time they move, they stay just vibrant and dedicated in the serving of the Lord. They don't even miss a beat. I love that about them. I'm impressed by that. Especially considering the first move they make. The first time they move. It's not like they had tons of time to put their house on the market, right? And to just decide where they're going to live. They were forced out. They were evicted from where they left. And they have no choice of where they're going. Who knows where they're going to end up? And this is a couple, a husband and a wife, in the midst of throwing all their comfortable situation up in the air. Everything's out of sorts. And they land on their feet. And they don't miss a beat. They go right into staying dedicated to the Lord and serving others and helping others. I'm impressed by that. Makes me kind of look at them a little bit closely. So what do you guys have? How did your marriage become that strong? Not only that, we find what a help they were to other Christians. They were such a couple that you could depend on. They could be trusted to be those who could encourage others, especially when you look at Apollos. I love how they come in contact with Apollos. It says there in verse 24. In verse 24, it says, "Now a Jew named Apollos, an Alexandrian by birth, an eloquent man, came to Ephesus, and he was mighty in the Scriptures. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he was speaking and teaching accurately the things concerning Jesus, being acquainted only with the baptism of John. And he began to speak out boldly in the synagogue. But notice, but when Priscilla and Aquila, both the husband and the wife, both of them are credited to having a needed conversation with Apollos, and their teamwork together helps Apollos become an even better preacher and a better teacher because he's better equipped with the truth. And they help straighten him out on some things. I'm impressed with that. Especially when maybe we're familiar with maybe a scenario like this. Have you ever maybe been in a situation like this? Maybe you have a nice couple over for lunch or for dinner, maybe coffee or tea, something. Just enjoying each other's company, talking about things that you're familiar with, and you're just having a grand old time. And then all of a sudden, maybe they bring up a location you haven't been before. And maybe you're just casually asked, well, where exactly is that? And you watch them try to give you instructions, and it's just a train wreck. Have you ever seen that? Or maybe when the husband starts talking and starts telling you directions, and the wife's, no, don't listen to him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's been there 100 times, and he always gets lost. What are you talking about? And then all of a sudden, this attempt to try to help somebody else just explodes because they can't communicate effectively. They trip over each other's words, or they're bitter towards each other. They're not trusting one another. I love how we find out that Aquila and Priscilla both had such an encounter with Apollos. He didn't leave that situation going, boy, thanks for the help, but boy, what a nightmare that was. He's actually strengthened by the experience of this husband and wife together, working together, helping him find his way to the truth more accurately. Something else I think I find impressive about them, and just as a preacher, as a teacher, we're always open, always wanting people to question us, maybe say, help me understand the scriptures better. If we're honest with ourselves, sometimes that can be a little sore spot. maybe sometimes hard. Maybe someone comes to you, wants to give you a little bit of advice. Maybe you need to handle this a little bit better. And I know the type of people that I have been so thankful that have helped me. Well, maybe I need to be a little bit more humble about taking pointers and advice. Scriptures talk about a skill that people have. Like apples of gold in settings of silver, so is a right word spoken in correct circumstances. They seem to be the kind of couple that would, maybe a potential controversial situation come up, they would be able to handle that in such a way that their understanding of that. Kind of watch their tongue. Their tongue doesn't create a fire the way James talks about how easily our tongues do. Especially a man like this. This man was mighty in the scriptures. This man was a learned man. Potential for disaster to strike, and maybe just don't say the right thing and maybe the right way, and helped him humble himself to where he realized he was thankful for the encounter, appreciated their advice, appreciated their direction. And notice what it says. It says in verse 27, and when he wanted to go across to Achaia, the brethren encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. And when he arrived, he greatly helped those who had believed through grace, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public. They were a huge asset to Apollos. And not only that, spiritually speaking, they were the kind of couple that someone like the Apostle Paul knew prioritized their life, always putting God and the gospel and the needs of Jesus Christ above whatever personal things were going on in their lives. He knew he could trust them to do that. That says a lot, because getting a recommendation from Paul, you knew you really had to be pretty dedicated. Because, you know, we have someone like John Mark, who started off pretty well, but we know later on, Paul was kind of not very comfortable with having him come along with him, or maybe recommending him, because he deserted the work. But then you have someone like Timothy, someone where other places where Paul says, I know of no one else like him, where he will care about your concerns. He will put your needs above his own. So many other people, he says, well, they're just so consumed with their own needs and own desires. Not Timothy. I can recommend Timothy strongly. Well, Ananias or Aquila and Priscilla, they were one of those couples, because Paul leaves them in Ephesus, trusting that they're going to continue on spiritually leading and spiritually guiding, and he knows the kind of level of dedication they have to the Lord. As we read that Ephesians chapter 18, beginning in verse 18, it says, Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria, and with him were Priscilla and Aquila. In Centuria he had his hair cut, for he was keeping a vow. They came to Ephesus, and he left them there. Especially considering, I think about the different times where Paul himself would be very concerned about not only establishing a work, but making sure that work could progress and grow in the right way. Various occasions where Paul would say, I hope that my work is not in vain. And would often have to maybe make personal visits or personal letters trying to straighten things out to make sure. I don't want to make sure that all the sacrifices I've made and this just comes to nothing, because we're not going to continue the work. He trusted this couple with that kind of leadership. See, I know, things are going to be just fine because of your dedication to these things. Well, as I take a step back and I examine myself, and Beth and I have done this many times, we look at this couple and we're very honest with ourselves. We realize the weaknesses we have, the things we're trying to get better at, the things we would like to be able for someone like Paul to say about both of us, or for the Lord to trust us with being useful or helpful together. And I realize, for me, and we both talked about this, we're going to need a lot of prayer. And the scriptures talk about how beneficial prayer is. And we're going to focus our attention for this lesson, hopefully getting some personal applications of how the principles of prayer that Jesus gives us. I believe if we, as not only as individuals, but especially married couples, husbands and wise would dedicate themselves to the principles of prayer that Jesus teaches us with. I believe that there's a lot of potential to create and establish and equip us with the kind of characteristics that we see Aquila and Priscilla have as being trusted with that spiritual strength, not only individually, but together as a couple. And just starting there with that verse in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 12, a threefold cord is not quickly broken. And something that Beth and I have learned throughout our marriage, as we go to the scriptures, as we communicate to each other, try to get better in our marriage, we realize how much we need God, especially a strong prayer relationship with God, letting God direct us, but also pouring out our hearts in a way where God is leading us and helping us to pray more effectively. And I want to turn to another passage that also helps me realize how important it is that we learn to apply and implement the kinds of things that Jesus teaches us to pray about, especially as a husband and wife. When you turn to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, there's some practical applications for husbands to be considered about their wives, to make sure that their relationship stays close, that we stay committed to each other, and that a husband realizes that he has the great task and responsibility of looking at his wife with an understanding spirit, to realize that he's going to have to consider so much of her dynamic, of realizing how much different just by being a woman and being a man and the differences therein, but also taking into account that we have to be much more delicate and patient and understanding as leaders. And notice what he says. He says there's something that is at stake if we don't succeed at this. He says, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. Now, I've looked at this passage a number of different ways, and I know predominantly I've tended to see the application, which makes perfect sense when you think about it, that how could God willingly open up his ears to a husband who's unwilling to patiently listen to the concerns of his wife? And I realize, I believe that's a part of the application there, that if I want to open communication with my father, I'd better have my ears open and listening to the concerns and the fears and the things that my wife needs and wants me to be patient about and considering. I also think there's another application that is just as applicable for our purposes here this evening we're going to look at. It would pretty much go to show that that if I'm not in a harmonious relationship with my wife, if I'm inconsiderate and I'm selfishly just kind of doing the things that matter to me and not considering my wife, good luck getting in the same room with my wife and being able to pray together. In other words, by nature, if I'm not striving to try to live a harmonious life with my wife, I'm not going to be able to implement what is perhaps the most important part of that marriage, spiritually going to God together in prayer. And I simply want to look at the way that Jesus teaches us to pray and see how much more beneficial our relationship could get as husbands and wives if we implemented his teaching as a husband and wife come together to pray together, to not let our prayers be hindered, but to be open in that communication to the Lord. Turn over to Luke chapter 11. In Luke chapter 11, the apostles were used to hearing Jesus pray. Jesus prayed all the time, prayed often. And the apostles were privileged, and they got to hear Jesus praying on many occasions. And they were so used to hearing him pray, and they were so impacted by the way Jesus prayed, they realized, we can learn something from you. Would you teach us? Teach us how we can pray. That's what they said there in Luke chapter 11. Read that with me, Luke 11, verse 1. It says, it happened that while Jesus was praying in a certain place, after he had finished, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray, just as John also taught his disciples. And so when Jesus teaches them to pray, he uses a template. And that template is what we've become to know as what we would say maybe the Lord's Prayer. And I'll be honest, not until my wife and I start really challenging ourselves to implement lessons that Jesus teaches about prayer, that I realize how important it is that we use this template. And I realize that many times for me, I maybe didn't use it as much as I could have or should have, undoubtedly, because many times we rightly so preach and teach that it's not intended to be just spoken verbatim and repetitively in such a way that we realize that many others tend to abuse this teaching. But that, putting that aside, Jesus did give them this order of praying because it is a way to effectively teach us how to spiritually prioritize our minds in such a way that will help us draw closer to God, be more effective for God. And something that my wife, Beth, and I have tried to do, we always try to do better about this, but we've also found ourselves encouraging others to just try it. We always say, just try this. We started individually. I individually would tell Beth, I'm going to make sure I pray as I start my prayer in the morning, in my own words, in my own way. Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Next phrase, pray about the kingdom. Pray that his will be done. And I discipline my mind to say, I can't go on to the next phrase until I complete this pattern. Beth started doing the same thing. Something we both noticed was, again, some spiritual lessons and some spiritual strength we were beginning to realize was forming in our lives. We realized, well, wait a minute, what would happen if we started implementing this together in our marriage? And I want to just go through that together and see how we might benefit by doing something like this. So Jesus says, pray then like this. The first phrase he says is, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. I'm sure I'm not alone, like other men, husbands, who, when you took your wife and you were making a pledge, you were making a vow that you're going to care for this woman for the rest of your life, there's a certain amount of respect and honor that goes to our father-in-laws. That we recognize that this father of this girl is trusting another man to take his girl and essentially care for and lead her in the same manner that he has put all of his love and all of his devotion to her. And I've always cherished that relationship. And it is a sacred, really, relationship between a father-in-law and his son-in-law. Recognize that we're changing things here. And a lot of trust is going into giving that up where this new relationship begins. That being said, as we get close to our families, we get close to our father-in-laws and other in-laws, we also, as much as we respect each other, we get to know each other's weaknesses, we get to know each other's flaws, we get to know the things that we're just not exactly perfect about. And there can be times when we can suddenly, sometimes without even thinking about it, use that knowledge in a weak moment. Well, boy, now I can see why you're talking to me that way. You know, every time I see you with your family, just the way I know your father or your mother, we always tell ourselves, you know, we're going to try to discipline our tongue, try to discipline how we talk. It's kind of amazing to me how easily sometimes things like that come out. Jesus himself warned us about that and makes us realize even those that we respect, those leaders in our life, whether it's our parents, our grandparents, in-laws that we revere and look up to, essentially as much honor as we have for each other, we didn't realize that we're also flawed individuals. We're imperfect. Even as we're trying to do our best, Jesus points this out in Matthew chapter 7. In Matthew chapter 7, remember what he said about even the best father? What word did he use to describe him? Even fathers that do their very best to look out for their children, he says, even though you're evil, that is, you're imperfect. You have your flaws, you have your weaknesses, let's be honest. And there is only one perfect one, and he's in heaven. But this is what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, beginning of verse 11. He says, if you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give what is good to those who ask him? So there is something that's truly helpful to us. Imagine just put this scenario in front of you. You're there with your wife. Husbands, you're there with your wives. and you're holding her hand, you're near her, and you're going to God in prayer together, and you both mutually recognize you're going to address our Father. Recognizing that you are going to the perfect Father who looks at your wife and sees her as His created one, who belongs to her, who He has made her in His image. And in many ways, you are now realizing you are looking to Him and He is looking to you to lead and to cherish and to care for her as He cares for her, as the perfect one does. What I have begun finding out is it greatly helps me. It makes it very difficult. Have you been saying those words? This is her Father. This is our Father. And now I see her as the daughter of the King. And her likewise. The next words that come out of her mouth or our mouths as we talk to each other after having that prayer, it greatly affects how you start looking and how you start speaking to one another. And what I believe greatly affected has helped us in those situations when we maybe are in the presence of other couples, other individuals, and we together are trying to mutually pull in our encouragement and our strength together and talk together and make sure our words to each other are helpful, beneficial, and respectful. James himself talks about how the more we think about in that term, it helps how we speak to each other. Turn over to James. In James chapter 3. In James chapter 3, notice what he says about this temptation, this difficulty we have to watch the tongue. In verse 8, what does he say? He says in verse 8, "But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. With it, we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From this mouth come both blessing and cursing." What I have found, the more that I'm with my wife and I'm in the presence of my wife and I'm speaking and I'm using my tongue to address our Father, makes it a little bit easier than the next words out of my mouth to her are remembering how I need to address her. How should I speak to her? And remembering and planting that in our minds. This is so helpful for us. This is our Father in heaven, and hallowed be His name, and let us respectfully treat one another that honors the name that has created us. And if we go to the second phrase there, I can see so many things have helped us as well, but going to that next item, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. One of the things this has helped us with and helped us not only individually but collectively is realizing what this is training our minds to do is remember that as servants of God, as children of God, we have been created by Him and rejuvenated through the gospel to have one purpose. And that one purpose supersedes any other purpose that we may have, even as a husband and wife, and it is to honor His will and to be useful to perpetuate the borders of the kingdom, to make sure that we are being useful in such a way that others have an opportunity for the kingdom to be brought to them, for us to be useful in that way. Now, as we begin to order our lives and order our thinking in that way, what that has helped us with is in those moments when inevitably, sure, we've all been in that situation. You have our busy schedules keep filling up. We have certain appointments that keep filling the calendar up, and we have aligned our week in such a way to make sure we juggle all these delicate matters. And what happens when all of a sudden you get that telephone call? We're not going to be able to have this appointment. You have to change this. We're going to switch this to Tuesday. This is no longer going to be at 3 o'clock. We're going to change that over here. I struggle with that a lot. That's hard sometimes to manage sudden changes. What I love about Priscilla and Aquila, they had a huge sudden change in their life, and it didn't quite affect them the way I know perhaps it could affect me and has potentially affected me in the past. Guess what, Priscilla and Aquila? You're not allowed to live here anymore. All the things you thought about doing a month from now, those plans are scrapped, and you now have to change everything about what your day-to-day life is going to be. And they were willing to adapt to that. As I look at them, the reason I believe they were able to do that is they had this mindset implanted in their minds together. They both had to be in agreement. Our sole purpose for even being in this marriage together is to be useful to God. And it is His will. It is His timetable. It is when He decides, I need to be at this place, or over here at this time. And what you begin to realize is all those sudden changes, those things that throw your whole momentum off and ability to manage things off, you begin trusting that I'm just here as God wants me, where God wants me, and I'm willing to have my schedule change according to His plans, because essentially I can be useful wherever He wants me. In other words, what my mindset is, well, the reason we have this soccer practice here is because we're going to use that opportunity to talk to some of the folks and the parents about maybe trying to plant the seed of the gospel. And when that's in your mind, when all of a sudden maybe that soccer practice doesn't happen, and all of a sudden we have to change it to this, well, your mind says, we're just here to plant the seed of the gospel. And we're just going to be doing it in this place, at that time, with these people, instead of over there. That's how Priscilla and Aquila looked at it. Well, we're here in Rome. For what purpose? The kingdom. Well, guess what, Priscilla and Aquila? You're not going to live in Rome anymore. We're packing our bags. Well, what are we going to do when we get there? Same thing we've been doing since we lived in Rome. When we get to Corinth, we'll keep planting the seed of the gospel. That's why this is so crucial. And Jesus has purposely given this template. So we get that in our mind. We don't say anything else in our prayer until we establish we are here solely for the purpose of planting the seed of the kingdom. Notice how any other passages help us with it. Turn over to Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1. Paul encourages us to do that not only as an individual, but as families, it is paramount that we do so. And it's so helpful in keeping us right-centered and on the same page, both together as husbands and wives and as families. But this is Colossians chapter 1, verse 13. Notice what he says. He rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of His beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. Okay, so what's my mindset now? Now that I'm in that kingdom, now that you and I are citizens of the kingdom, what's the mindset? He tells us the mindset. The mindset is that my life is centered on everything in my life, from the soccer game to the ladies' tea party to doing the laundry to what I do at work. All of it funnels into one purpose, that everything has been created and is here for God's purposes to bring people to honor Him. Verse 15, He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by Him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through Him and for Him. He is before, key, He is before all things. He is before that sewing class. He is before that meal I'm trying to prepare. He is before that vacation me and my husband are planning together. He is before all of it. And once I get that in my mind, that's what being in the kingdom is all about. It's centering everything in my life. All has one designated purpose. It is really to simplify everything else and condense it so that we realize, as a husband and a wife, it makes it easy. Well, what's this marriage all about? The kingdom. Simplifies it a lot. And it's a lot easier for me and my wife to be on the same page about that when we're praying that together. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be Your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done. And notice how he continues in front of that. And he establishes that he is before all things. But notice as the progression continues. Go to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. Note verse 17. He concludes all this firstness, this dominion of Christ first. Notice verse 17. He says, therefore, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. And realize, well, in many applications, that is that everything is by the authority of him. But in the context is everything is about him. Yes, the ironing, the cooking, the kids, all the things that we do together as a family. He says, let me simplify it for you. All things are to be useful in the kingdom. And God has a time plan. And we don't always understand it. It's not always our will. It's where he does he want you. And he may change things up on us. Note if we establish that, notice what the next practical application of that is in verse 18. What's the first practical application of putting God first in all your life? 18. It's in the home. Wives, be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. Children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. How does it all stay in the same tune? Well, when the family's in the van, we're on the way to play practice, we're on the way to the ball game, what's the conversation like? Isn't it great that God has given us his son and we have an opportunity, maybe if there's someone I'm going to talk to or maybe I'm going to bump into there, maybe also you get the, what? Play practice is canceled? Oh, someone's sick, we're not going to be able to make it. Well, we're just going to do that same thing just in a different place. That's how Aquila and Priscilla were able to do that. Jesus taught them in the template of this prayer to order their thinking that way. And as a husband and a wife, I can't be on the same page with my wife unless we together mutually make it an intent. We're going to train our minds to think that way. Your kingdom come, your will be done. That satisfies the crazy schedule changes, and I didn't plan for this. I didn't know you were going to be working late. I had this planned out. Makes it a whole lot easier to deal with that. Well, maybe you're working late because you have an opportunity. Maybe this changed. Maybe I'm in the hospital. Maybe I'm over here. Maybe this happened. That's what it did for Priscilla and Aquila. Maybe the reason we're being kicked out of Rome is so we can be useful over in Corinth. And it just so happened to meet a preacher by the name of Paul, and they were able to do a lot of good together because they all had that mindset. Something else happens when husbands make it a priority to get that in their home. They start taking leadership. They start realizing, and it's the same thing for me. When I realize what a lofty objective that is, I realize I can't do this by myself. I want to need God's help. And it's going to take a lot of time together as a family, sitting down, reading the Bible together, reminding ourselves, what's our priority? What's our purpose? Why are we even a family? What is God's will for us? We tell us it's about the kingdom. It's about being used where he wants you to and having the faith like the mustard seed we talked about to simply propel his gospel as best as we can. And so here is his husband's Ephesians 5, verse 25. Love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word. That responsibility for a husband to wash his wife with the word, that's him taking leadership and saying, well, we're going to dedicate our family to say we want to be on the same page when we pray together. Your kingdom come, your will be done. You have to take the time to teach and to lead your family to make sure that we're on the same page with that. And so much good and encouragement comes from that. How about the next one? And note how helpful it's going to be. Again, it has to be that template. That's how Jesus taught it. Our Father, your kingdom. Now the things here. How about our daily bread? What I have begun to find when I follow this template and realize the next section is realizing that Jesus wants me to really limit my schedule and my plans to a 24-hour period. And it really is a challenge, but nonetheless, he tells me, Daniel, and he says in the Sermon on the Mount, Daniel, I want you to stop worrying so much about what you're going to have next week. Just stop worrying so much about, is this enough to have, you know, for the next few months, the next year? Because when we go on a 24-hour basis, when we just say, well, today, Lord, take care of the needs that we have today. Feed us, clothe us, shelter us for what we have today. What I've found is that it is a whole lot easier to have the faith and the confidence to start making the kingdom first when you don't have to plan your whole day around, do we have enough of this? Do we have enough of that? It's so much easier to think about how many conversations that have rocked marriages just about money issues alone would be avoided, could be helped if we just condense our thinking into saying, we need to have the kind of faith that says, God says, do you have enough to last you today? There's some cereal up on the shelf. You got milk to put, make a couple bowls for the kids. We got some hot dogs in the refrigerator. What am I going to spend my day worrying about today? Where does God want me? Where can I be useful? And I know this is how Aquila and Priscilla ordered the life because they had a business. They had a tent-making business. And guess what happened? All of a sudden, that tent-making business came to complete halt. And you know what they did when the business came to a halt? They did exactly what happened when they were told to leave Rome. Well, we're just going to keep preaching the gospel. And that was the centerpiece of their relationship. How are we going to get this tent-making business back on its feet again? The only way you can live disciplined like that is this section of the prayer is so important. Give us today. Just, do I have enough today? If the answer is yes, and it most certainly always is, then I know what I need to spend that 24 hours on. Or most of my energy needs to be in giving to the kingdom. Read what he says. Let's go back to Acts chapter 18. And notice they had this business going. Acts chapter 18. There it says in verse 3 that, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and they were working, for by trade they were tent makers, and he was reasoning in the synagogue every Sabbath and trying to persuade Jews and Greeks. What I love about this is verse 4 is the tent making business was essentially there to make sure that they had what they needed on a day-to-day basis, and what they did most of their days was focused on the teaching and the preaching, not that tent making business. Whereas it was so that they could focus on what would happen when the tent-making business went by the wayside, and it did. Notice it says in verse 12, but while Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, the Jews with one accord arose up against Paul and brought him before the judgment seat, saying, this man persuades men to worship God contrary to the law. But when Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, if it were a matter of wrong or a vicious crime, O Jews, it would be reasonable for me to put up with you. But if there are questions about words and names and your own law, look after it yourselves. I am unwilling to be a judge of these matters. And he drove them away from the judgment seat. And they all took hold of Sosthenes, the leader of the synagogue, and began beating him in front of the judgment seat. But Gallio was not concerned about any of these things. Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria, and with him were Priscilla and Aquila. Well, they also had this tent-making business back there. Well, this day, we have enough from that business we had. Yeah. That's what we're going to do today. We're going to get ourselves in position for the next mission, which is exactly what they did. Because Paul's not taking a couple and leaving them in a city where Paul's priorities are preaching the gospel if he knows most of their thinking and most of their discussion is going to be, how can we make this business? He's not going to take people like that and leave them there in Ephesus. There's this kind of people that, yes, we have our responsibilities. We have our hours marked out. We have to, yes, keep this business going. Yes, we have responsibilities to do that. But in the context of it all, do I have enough for today from that business? That's how that practically fits. And if the answer is yes, I know what most of my focus and most of my attention and my energy can be given to. And again, the only way I know how to do that and make that happen as a husband and a wife is I've got to pray together with my wife that we're on the same page. We're letting Christ teach us to have that drilled in our mind. Give us this day our daily bread. And as I've had to be honest, as much as these are high ideals, these are very difficult ideals to implement. No. It's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of forgiveness. It's going to take a lot of asking for forgiveness. And that's what I love about God's plan and God's will for us. He understands how weak we are. That's what I love about this part of the prayer. We need to stop putting so much pressure on each other and realize that God is going to help us. And no doubt they would have had that relationship with each other. There's going to be some days when Aquila, she's on her game, and sometimes maybe she's struggling. Maybe sometimes when Aquila, maybe he's really being that leader he needs to be, and sometimes he's weak. This is the part of the prayer where we realize how God understands, and we need to be willing to be understanding with each other and not put so much pressure on each other and demands on each other and realize there's going to be a lot of forgiveness. And isn't it so comforting that as a spouse, you could actually hear your husband say the words to God, our Father, and actually hear him say, Father, forgive me. I've been putting a lot of effort on these other distracting things. I'm the coach of the softball team, and I'm trying to keep this business going. And I realize there are times when we haven't been prioritizing. I'm asking for forgiveness. And Lord, while I ask you for forgiveness, I ask it only because I forgive my wife. And we got talking about these things, maybe there's blame being shifted, and maybe I could do this better if I know why you do this. You ever had that moment when maybe you have had a little disagreement, maybe a disagreement comes into full-on fight, and you got to look at each other and say, okay, let's just put it behind us, let's move on. And you're sitting there and you say, is everything okay? Yeah. Are you sure? Yeah, it's fine. How much reassuring could it be that it's fine with my spouse when you hear them say the words to the Lord, I've forgiven them. I've forgiven them. The only way we could truly be a team, that Aquila Priscilla could be a team, I'm sure it was difficult. I'm sure it had its challenges. Forced to leave your home. But it's like to be a leader of a family, and you've got customers and you've got people expecting things from you, and you've got a time frame. You gotta get this done, and you got your name and your reputation at stake. You gotta make sure it's quality material. And in the meantime, you've got all these other responsibilities of new Christians, new studies, the concerns about individuals who you care about and you pray about and wonder if they're even thinking about spiritual things. Stress, it gets the better of us, and sometimes we just let off that steam, and it's the tongue. That tongue is evil. Hence why we need to be willing to forgive and let go of it. He says, get that in your mind. You're not going to be perfect in this. And you're going to learn a lot from this, and you're going to have to grow from it, and you're going to have to continue to stay together with it. And then we really, really get to the nitty-gritty of it. Because now we have to be honest with each other and with God about why it is that sometimes we mess up. What is it that really tempts us? What is it that really exposes our weaknesses? Imagine what it would be like having a trusting partner that you could be so open and honest with to say, Lord, I'm prone to exploding sometimes. I'm prone to maybe just not being patient as I ought to. Could you help me, Lord? Could you lead me not in these ways? And I'm so thankful you have my wife or my husband to lead me and strengthen me in this. But very quickly, just I believe that the end result of this is we're going to have homes like that hymn we have, God give us Christian homes. Homes where the Bible is loved and taught. Homes where the Master's will is sought. Homes crowned with beauty. The love hath wrought, and on it goes. But one thing we found together, and would just ask if you just give it a try, see how it helps. But the Lord has given us that template to help us. I believe it had to have been a source of comfort for this couple that they could be that committed to the Lord and each other.